Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8. The Lord slays the king of the demons. Text 34. Please repeat. Tata sabhayam upavishtam utame nripa asane sambrita tejasam vibhum alakshita dvairatam ati amarshanam. Prachanda vaktram na babaja kaschana. Tata sabhayam upavishtam utame nripasane sambrita tejasam vibhum alakshita dvairatam atyamarshanam prachanda vaktram nababuja kaschana. Tata sabhayam upavistam utame nripasane sambrita tejasam vibhum alakshita dvairatam atyamarshanam prachanda vaktram nababhaja kaschana. Ladies.
Uh-huh.
Tata. Thereafter. Sabhayam. In the assembly house. Upavishtam. Seated. Utame. On the best. Nripa asane. Throne. Upon which King Hiranyakashipu used to sit. Samvritta tejasam. In full effulgence. Vibhum. The Supreme Lord. Alakshita dvairatam. Whose challenger or enemy was not seen. Ati, very much. Amarshanam, fearsome, due to his anger. Prachanda, terrible. Vaktram, face. Na, not. Babaja, worshipped. Kaschana, anyone. Translation. Manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisimha, being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Please repeat. Manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisimha, being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When the Lord sat on the throne of Hiranyakashipu, there was no one to protest. No enemy came forward on behalf of Hiranyakashipu to fight with the Lord. This means that his supremacy was immediately accepted by the demons. Another point is that although Hiranyakashipu treated the Lord as his bitterest enemy, he was the Lord's faithful servant in Vaikuntha. And therefore the Lord had no hesitation in sitting on the throne that Hiranyakashipu had so laboriously created. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that sometimes, with great care and attention, great saintly persons and rishis offer the Lord valuable seats dedicated with Vedic mantras and tantras. But still, the Lord does not sit upon those thrones. Hiranyakashipu, however, had formerly been Jai, the doorkeeper at the Vaikuntha gate. And although he had fallen because of the curse of the Brahmanas and had gotten the nature of a demon, and although he had never offered anything to the Lord as Hiranyakasipu, the Lord is so affectionate to his devotee and servant that he nonetheless took pleasure in sitting on the throne that Hiranyakashipu had created. In this regard, it is to be understood that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of life. Translation again. Manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisimha, being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. So this pastime, and this verse in particular, is very wonderful. As Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that great sages and rishis build beautiful thrones dedicated with mantras and tantras for the Lord, but the Lord does not sit on their thrones. But he did sit on the throne of Hiranyakasipu, who was the greatest of demons. The reason is that Hiranyakasipu had previously been the Lord's gatekeeper in Vaikuntha, named Jai. We actually have two gatekeepers here, Jai and Vijai. And there's a history of how Jai and Vijai were cursed by four Brahmins whom they denied entrance into Vaikuntha. And that's the reason, on a certain level, that Jai and Vijai took birth as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. But there's a deeper reason, which is that the Lord is the origin of everything. Janmadiyasiyataha. That means that everything in us exists originally in the Lord. So just as we have a fighting spirit, which is sometimes manifested in favorable or unfavorable ways, the Lord also has a fighting spirit. But who can fight with the Lord? The Lord was thinking, who can fight with me? Who's powerful enough to fight with me? So Jai and Vijai, being the gatekeepers, like bodyguards. So bodyguards generally are big and strong. So Jai and Vijai, understanding the Lord's desire, thought, we are big and strong, so who who else would be better than us to fight with the Lord? So that was the Lord's inner desire, and that was Jayan Vijay's inner reciprocation with the Lord's desire. And then, as a lila or pastime, the four Brahmins, the four Kumaras, came to the precincts of Vaikuntha, and Jayan Vijay prevented them from entering, and they became angry and they cursed Jayan Vijay. And they were given the choice. They could take birth for three lifetimes as demons, or for seven lifetimes as devotees. So they chose three lifetimes as demons. One reason was they wanted to return to their service in Vaikuntha. But the other reason is they wanted to facilitate the Lord and his desire to fight. Sometimes a king, he'll have a wrestler to wrestle with, because who's gonna fight with the king? No one would dare fight with the king. But sometimes the king wants to wrestle, so he'll have a wrestler. Similarly, sometimes the king will have a jester, because who's going to joke with the king? But the king also wants to enjoy that mood, so he'll keep a jester, and the jester can mock the king, and the king enjoys it. If anyone else were to do it, he would be punished. But the jester is allowed. Like one king had a jester, and so the king asked him, "What is the difference between you and a fool?" So the jester like measured the distance between him and the king, and he said, 3 feet. So, you know, anyone else, that was like an insult. He would be severely punished. But in this life, as Hiranyakasipu, Jai or Hiranyakasipu was a great demon, and he considered the Lord to be his bitterest enemy. He didn't show any devotion as Hiranyakasipu. He showed only animosity, and not only toward the Lord, but toward the Lord's devotee, Prahlad, who was his own son. And as we discussed, the Lord takes offenses against his devotee more seriously than he takes offenses against himself. But still, the Lord sat on the throne of Hiranyakasipu, considering that in his previous life he was Jai, he was a devotee and servant of the Lord. So this is very encouraging to us, although we should not take advantage of it in a wrong way. But Srila Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service as continuous. Anyabhilasita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. So anu means continuous. It also means following, and shilanam means cultivation. It's a continuous cultivation. And there are many verses in the Bhagavatam to the same effect. Ahaitukhiya pratihata inatma suprasidati. That devotional service, which is unmotivated and uninterrupted, can completely satisfy the self. We may engage in devotional service, but if we have some material motivation, we won't feel satisfied. Or if our service is interrupted, means I'll do some service, but also do a little mental speculation, enjoy a little sense gratitude. You know, so if our devotional service is interrupted, that also will not fully satisfy the self. So pure devotional service is anushilanam. It is a continuous cultivation without any interruption. But from a certain point of view, Jai's service was interrupted. But still the Lord is so kind and affectionate to his devotee that he didn't consider the period when Jai was acting like a demon. I mean, he dealt with him as a demon, but he remembered that he was his devotee and servant, and therefore he accepted to sit on the throne of Hiranyakasipu. And that is the Lord's mercy, that he gives more importance to the service that we render than to the interruption of the service. Now, the last sentence is very significant. It's the conclusion. The last sentence of the purport is the conclusion. It is to be understood that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of his life. Now, sometimes, based on the mind, we distinguish, usually on the basis of sense gratification or mental speculation, or maybe even in relation to devotional service, we distinguish what is fortunate and what is unfortunate. But we may not really know what is fortunate or what is unfortunate. The Lord knows, but we may not know. And therefore, the best course for a devotee is to surrender to the Lord and trust in him. There's a story, I have told it before, of a farmer whose horse escaped. He had a horse, and the horse escaped and went into the forest. So the neighbors came and said, "Oh, how unfortunate! Your only horse escaped from the corral and is gone." And he replied, "What is fortunate and what is unfortunate is very hard to say." So then, after a while, the horse came back from the forest with some other horses. So the neighbor said, "Oh, how fortunate! You had one horse, now you have five horses." He said, "What is fortunate and unfortunate is very difficult to say." So the new horses were wild, and so his son had the task of breaking them in. So one of the horses was so wild that he threw the son. And the son broke his leg. So the neighbor said, oh, how unfortunate, your son has broken his leg. And what did he say? Yes, what is fortunate and unfortunate is very hard to say. So then the king's army came through, and they were looking for young men to enlist in the army to join the forces in battle. And they heard that there was a young man in that household. So they came to take the son into the army. But they saw he had a broken leg. Oh, he's useless. We can't take him. Then the neighbor said, oh, how fortunate. The army didn't take your son. And what is fortunate and unfortunate is very difficult to say. So quite often, we don't really know what is in our ultimate best interest. But our mind reacts. Oh, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. Accepting and rejecting. Now, so this is very important. It is to be understood that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of his life. Oh, I lost my job, how unfortunate. But when one is surrendered to the Lord and under the Lord's protection, any situation is fortunate for a devotee because he can use it for further advancement in Krishna consciousness, to take more shelter of the Lord. And here I thought of two devotees who, like Jai, they got other devotees, other bodies. They got other bodies, but ultimately they were still fortunate. One example is Vritrasura. Vritrasura was one of the fiercest demons ever. There's a history, of course. There's always a history to everything. But in short, King Indra had a priest named Vishwarup. And there's always this fighting between the demons and the demigods. So King Indra had a priest named Vishwarup who was performing sacrifices and, you know, offering oblations to the demigods. And actually, he gave Indra the Narayana Kavacha. It's like a mantra, but it acts as a shield. Very powerful. But Vishwarup, it's a peculiarity of his birth that his father was a demigod, but his mother was from a family of demons. So he also had affection for demons. So, along with offering oblations to the demigods, on the side, he was secretly offering oblations to the demons. And eventually, Indra found out, and he became very angry, and he killed Vishwarup. And then, after killing him, he felt sorry. I mean, he'd killed a Brahmin, which was not a good thing to do. Vishwarup's father, Tvasha, he performed a yajna to produce a person who would kill Indra. I mean, these Brahmins were very powerful. But the Vedic mantras, I mean, the Vedic yajnas, sacrifices, are such that the mantras have to be pronounced very perfectly. Otherwise, it can have a contrary result. It's not so in our line of devotion, because in bhakti, because bhava grahi janardana, Krishna accepts the mood of devotion. And in one talk Srila Prabhupada gave fairly early in the movement, he commented that the devotees were mispronouncing the word guru in Bande Guru Sri Charanaravinda and saying something like garo, which means cow. So literally they were saying, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the cow. But Srila Prabhupada quoted Bhava Grahi Janardana, that Krishna accepts the mood, and so he accepted that as offering obeisances to the guru, even though the word was mispronounced. But in the Vedic yagyas, if you mispronounce a word, it can have serious repercussions. So when Tvasha was performing the yagya, he prayed for someone who would be the enemy of Indra. But he slightly mispronounced the word, and so what he got was someone who was Indra's enemy. In other words, he wasn't inimical to Indra, but Indra was inimical to him. So anyway, this Vritrasura came out of the fire, and he was huge, fearsome. And so he fought. He and the demons fought against Indra and the demigods. And at a certain stage, he hit Indra's elephant with his club. It was like so powerful that the elephant moved back 14 steps and fell. And Indra, he was like so discouraged, he didn't even want to fight anymore. And Vritrasura encouraged him. He said, you're thinking you're the doer, but actually the Lord is the doer. You know, gain and loss, victory and defeat, these are all in the hands of the Lord. You should just do your duty and depend on the Lord. They had like a whole philosophical discussion. And at the end of this discussion, and I brought the book because these words of Vritrasura are so beautiful. They're almost like the Shikshastakam. And once I met a very prominent follower in the Vallabhacharya Sampradaya in Bombay, and he referred to these verses. He was very excited. He's a very pious man. He's very excited about these verses. And then when I came back to Juhu, you know, I told Srila Prabhupada about it and got out the Bhagavatam and read these verses. For the sake of time, I won't read the Sanskrit, but I will read Vritrasura's prayers. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, Will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind will always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes, and my body always engage in the loving service of your lordship. O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruvaloka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides. Nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. And this one is especially sweet. O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them. As small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. O my Lord and Master, I'm wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. I wish, let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. So this pastime was described by Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. And after hearing this pastime, Maharaj Parikshit said to Shukadev Goswami, you know, out of so many living entities, one is a human being. And out of so many human beings, one is civilized. One is a follower of Vedic culture. And out of so many followers of Vedic culture, one is a transcendentalist. And out of so many transcendentalists, one is a devotee. It's like a devotee is so rare. So how could this demon be a devotee? It's bewildering. And then Shukadeva Goswami explained the history of Vritrasura. That in his previous life, he had been King Chitraketu. And King Chitraketu had everything except a son. He felt everything was useless because he didn't have a son. So anyway, he confided in a sage, and the sage gave him a benediction, gave him a way to have a son. So he had a son, and he was very jubilant. Everyone was very jubilant. But the co-wives of the wife who had the son became envious. So they poisoned the son. And then the king was so depressed that he didn't see any point in living. He was so disappointed. So then the same sage, Angira Muni and Narada Muni, came to console him, and they gave him philosophical instructions. I mean, all of these instructions are so valuable for us because we always get caught up in this duality of happiness and, how unfortunate he doesn't have a son. Oh, how fortunate he has a son. Oh, how unfortunate the son died. So it's really important that we read because we always need to be reminded, and especially in this mundane atmosphere of Kali Yuga, everyone is totally caught up in the bodily concept of life and concepts of good and bad based on sense gratification and speculation. So anyway, they consoled him, they gave him transcendental knowledge, and they gave him a prayer, like a mantra, to say. And they even brought his son back to life, temporarily. And the son, he also preached to his father, that why are you lamenting? You know, this is the bodily concept of life, and you should surrender to Krishna, and your real relationship is with Krishna, not with the body and the byproducts of the body. And the son went back to his destination. So King Chitraketu, he became enlightened, and he was reciting that prayer. And eventually the Lord appeared. And he offered prayers to the Lord. And he lost interest in, you know, the kingdom and so on. And so he had like an aerial airplane, like yesterday we were hearing about the airplanes from Naikatma Prabhu and Srimad Bhagavatam. So he had an aerial airplane. And he would fly with his wives. They also regretted that they'd poisoned the boy. They also became enlightened. And so they were chanting, just flying about and chanting the glories of the Lord. Like they used to have a boat in Hawaii. They used to travel and chant. So he had an airboat, an airship. And they were chanting and traveling. So while traveling, they came to the abode of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva was sitting with Parvati, his wife, on his lap, you know, with his arm around her. And Chitraketu, he was like struck with wonder, like, how is this? Oh yeah, and he was addressing a whole assembly of sages and saintly persons. And King Chitraketu thought, how is this? You know, he's in an assembly with so many sages and saintly persons, and he's sitting with his wife on his lap, and it's like embracing his wife. And just seeing that irony, he laughed. And Parvati heard him laugh, and she cursed him. So he, you know, the plane came down, he got off of the plane, and he accepted the curse without any protest. And then Lord Shiva, I mean, he glorified the Vaishnavas. And one verse in particular, Narayana parasarve na kuschit chanabhivyate swarga apavarga narakeshu apitu yartha darshana. That how wonderful are the devotees of the Lord who have taken shelter of Lord Narayan, that they are equipoised in every situation. Because they consider the heavenly planets, the hellish planets, or liberation, all the same. And Srila Prabhupada explains they're the same because a devotee doesn't live in heaven or hell or anywhere. He lives with Krishna. So as a result, of Parvati's curse, Chitraketu became the demon Britrasura. But he only had the body of a demon. He had the consciousness of a devotee. And another example is King Bharat. He was very advanced. It's described that he left his kingdom and paraphernalia, just like someone, you know, leaves the stool room after finishing his business. But while in the forest, performing his worship, a pregnant deer was crossing the river near his hermitage. And just then a lion let out a very loud call, and the mother deer became frightened, and she like bolted and like prematurely gave birth to the baby deer. And she went to the other side of the river, and then she died. And so King Bharat, out of compassion for the baby deer, took the baby deer to his ashram and took care of it. And the deer was like his constant companion. And gradually, he developed a mundane attachment to the deer. And once the deer didn't come back. It was wandering somewhere, didn't come back. And Bharat Maharaj was really worried. And he was condemning himself. He wasn't taking proper care of the deer. And he was looking for the deer. And he also fell and died thinking of the deer. And so, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, whatever your thoughts are at the time of death, you attain to that state. So he attained the body of a deer. But, again, this is the Lord's affection and appreciation for his devotee, that he allowed the deer to keep his consciousness from his previous life. Ordinary people don't. We don't know what we were in our last life. And most of the animals around, they probably don't remember what they were in their last lives. And so that deer, he was blessed with recollection of his past life. And so when he was old enough, he left home, left the other deer, and he went back to the place where he had his ashram before, like a holy place. And he just stayed there. He didn't want to get entangled in any sort of sense gratification or material attachment, even as a deer. And he just waited for the time of death to come. And then in his next life, he took birth as a Brahmin. But still he remembered the previous two lives. And he was very careful not to get entangled in any sort of material attachment or relationship. And it's a long story, but eventually, you know, he attained complete perfection in devotional service. So these are examples that a devotee is fortunate in any condition of life. And so we shouldn't be bewildered or confused or distracted by the body. Because bodies have different natures. And sometimes one acts in a certain way because of his nature, because of his body. But what really is important is the consciousness, Bhavagraha Janardana, the mood of service. Like once in Juhu, you know, eventually there were, you know, devotees, and they got married, and they had children, and children grew older. And so one day, a group of the children came into my office about, I don't know, 5 or 6. And there was one or two, they were like the spokespersons. And they were sort of complaining about the way the older devotees were treating them. Not, in other words, treating them like children and not as devotees. So they were like so intelligent, so mature, really. So one of them said, you know, we have children's bodies. So sometimes we act like children. But we're also devotees, and we should also be treated as devotees. It's like really, really wise, really mature. So we should be like that, see the devotion. I mean, it's not that we're unaware of people's natures based on their bodies, but we see the devotion, and we don't discount anyone because of their bodies or conditioning in a certain body or lifetime. And again, although we should really try to practice devotional service continuously, we should be afraid of falling down or deviating or having any interruption to our service. But we do. These are larger interruptions, but we have little interruptions. Like when we're chanting the holy name, we're trying to hear the holy name and our mind is somewhere else. So that's an interruption. I mean, of course, that's a very subtle one or small one. But however big or small it is, we just have to come back to Krishna and Krishna will accept us. And the same of others. If someone has gone astray and comes back, you know, we should be like Krishna. We should welcome the person back and not be focused on the interruption, but rather be focused on the service. I think a verse in the Bible, something to the effect that if you do not forgive others, how will the Lord forgive you? So, should be like that. But at the same time, try not to deviate and try to help those around us also not to deviate. Because you can come back and the Lord will accept you back, but in the meantime you suffer. You suffer. So to avoid that, it's better to be very careful. So this is really the Lord's merciful nature. There's also the example of Krishna and Putana. You may know the story that Putana was a demon, but she put poison on her breast and she changed her form. She was really a very horrible looking demon, but she changed her form to look like a beautiful goddess. And so she entered the home of Yashoda, and because she was so beautiful and charming, they let her enter. And then she took baby Krishna to feed her breast milk, which was actually poisoned, to kill him. And Krishna closed his eyes and described he sucked her milk, and he also sucked out her life. So she died, and her horrible form as a demon was revealed. But he elevated her to the position of a mother in the spiritual world. And this is considered the Lord's extreme mercy, that even though she came as an enemy to kill him, Krishna didn't take the dark side, that she came to kill me, but he took the bright side, that she came to feed me her breast milk. So she's like a mother. And so he gave her liberation and elevated her to the position of a mother in the spiritual world. So this is the extreme mercy of the Lord. And so we should have a faith in that mercy. We don't want to be mixed. We want to be pure. But even in that case, if we are mixed, you know, the Lord, out of his compassionate nature, he'll see the good more than the bad, and he will help us by creating a situation in which we're purified. But that too, we also have to cooperate with the Lord's merciful arrangement and not rebel against it. But if we remain surrendered to the Lord, a devotee is fortunate in any condition of his life. And so what to speak of us here in the body of human beings, in the association of devotees, with the deities, with the books, with the holy name, with the opportunity to render service and preach. I mean, how fortunate can we be? So we should take advantage of it and help create good fortune for others. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Another example is that of Ajamil. Ajamil was born in a Brahmin family, but then later, due to bad association, he became involved with a prostitute. He had a very beautiful, qualified Brahmin wife, but he got so bewildered that he left her for the prostitute. And to satisfy the prostitute, he engaged in all sorts of sinful activities and earned money by all sorts of nefarious means. And then at the age of 88, he was on his deathbed, and he had a young boy named Narayan. So at the time of death, the Yamadutas, the agents of Yamaraj, the god of death who punishes the sinful living entities, they came to take the soul from the body to be punished. And when he saw these fearsome, ghastly looking creatures, he panicked. And he just started to shout for his son. He was very attached to his son. He just started shouting, Narayan! 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 And immediately, the Vishnu Dutas came, the messengers of Lord Narayan, because he had called the name of Lord Narayan, even though he was intending to call his son. So they intervened, halt, you cannot take this soul. Why not? He's sinful. So there's a whole discussion. Who had jurisdiction over the soul of Ajamil? And the conclusion was that because he chanted the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, he was freed from sinful reactions and he was not punishable. So he was allowed to continue to live. And then, by the association of the Vishnu Dutas and hearing their discussions, he left home. He even left his son, to whom he was so attached. And he went to Haridwar and engaged in devotional service. And then when he was perfect in devotional service, the Vishnu Dutas came again and carried him back home, back to Godhead. So that was an interruption. It was a pretty, I mean, considering the course of a person's life, it was a pretty long interruption. But even then, he had that good fortune. Some saintly person advised him, you should call your son Narayan. And in the end, that saved him. And one of our god brothers, who later went astray, he reported an incident. He was in, we were at the Ardha Kumbh Mela in Prayag in 1970. And this devotee was working so hard. I mean, the conditions were so primitive. And it was really cold there. And he was cooking, like almost nonstop, on this wood, just wood. He just dug a little pit and put wood in it and lit the fire. And he was cooking for the devotees and cooking for the public, as Prabhupada wanted, you know, big prasad distribution for the public. He was just working very, very hard. And one day he walked into the pandal, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking about the story of Ajamil. And this devotee was like way at the back, you know, he had just come. And the way he describes it, Prabhupada looked at him and said that Ajamil had performed very, very pure service in his youth. And even though later he became entangled in sinful activities, because he had rendered very, very pure service in his youth, he was ultimately delivered. And so this devotee, he was struck. It was like Prabhupada was looking right at him. And he was a sannyasi at the time, and later he left sannyas. But he thought back that, you know, maybe Prabhupada knew, or in any case, Prabhupada gave him a very important instruction, that because he had rendered very, very pure service in his youth, ultimately he was delivered. All right. So we will let you go. And Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hare Hare Vaal. Hare Krishna.